Are you looking for the perfect way to get around your ranch or lease? Bad Boy Buggies of the Hill Country and B3HC Outfitters have a full line of electric four-wheel drive Bad Boy Buggies, and we customize it the way you want it. Gun and bow racks, off-road lighting, even feeders. We can add them all to your Bad Boy. Also, specializing in custom metal arts and gate signs, as well as custom golf carts for street and off-road applications. Conveniently located in San Marcos, call 512-667-6005 or visit www.b3hc.com. That's b3hc.com.
Razorback Ranch is earning a reputation as the premier wild boar hunting destination in Texas. Located between Dallas and Houston in Crockett, we are the perfect weekend getaway. Family friendly with a game room and flat screen TVs in the cabins, our accommodations are top notch. Select boars ranging from 60 to 200 pounds to bow or rifle hunt. Hunters are welcome to hunt hogs at feeders or chase them through creek bottoms and heavy brush. Call 713-203-3860 or visit RazorbackRanch.com. That's RazorbackRanch.com to book your trophy hog hunt today.
Fishing Corpus Christi and the surrounding bays since the 1950s, Captain Pat Hunt is an authority on redfish. A Vietnam veteran who spent 27 years as a teacher and high school basketball coach, he has a passion for sharing a lifetime of knowledge with his customers. Captain Pat provides the bait and tackle and cleans and bags your catch. So make your next trip to the coast a memorable one with Pat Hunt's Fishing Guide Service. He'll be on the water and on the bull red, so call 361-776-5332 or visit pathuntfishing.com. That's pathuntfishing.com.
Black mascara, L'Oreal on her lips, a tribal tattoo just above her hips, a honky-tonkin' woman who wears her ink well. Some things here under heaven are just cooler.
Good morning, Texas. Cable Smith welcoming you to the one and only Lone Star Outdoors Show. That's the great Ray Wiley Hubbard kicking things off for us this morning with Cooler in Hell. And I tell you what, with regular gun season opening up this morning, this time of the year is truly cooler than hell. It's my favorite time of the year anyway. Deer, ducks, turkey, quail, oh, take your pick. Anyway, we've got a great show lined up for you. Starting off with a fishing report from the legendary Lake Texoma with Captain John Brett of Texoma Striper Fishing. Then, as we mentioned, quail season is underway, so we'll get a fearless forecast from Texas Parks and Wildlife Upland Game Bird Program Leader Robert Perez. Then we'll round things out this morning with a very special treat when perhaps the outdoor industry's biggest personality and good old boy Michael Waddell drops in. So it's going to be a great show. Real quick here, we have some contest winners to congratulate. First of all, thanks to Vernon Richardson and his Hickory Creek Hunting Company for donating two 2011 Dove leases to DJ Farms. Also, he added a Mossberg shotgun, and Ducks Unlimited, needless to say, was thrilled. Vernon wins the table for 10 that we gave away right here on the show to the November 17th banquet. So congrats to Vernon, and all I can say is I hope he chooses me to take with him as one of his 9 guests. Also, congratulations to Josh McGuire, our November Photo of the Month winner. His peers selected a photo of his Black Lab Diesel as this month's winner, and you can see the photo on my homepage at texasoutdoorsmedia.com. Of course, Josh also wins a year subscription to Lone Star Outdoor News and is entered into our grand prize contest as well, which is a 2-day exotic doe unlimited hog hunt at Quattro B Bow Hunting Ranch and a whitetail shoulder mount from GR8 Mounts. And by the way, if you want to enter a photo into the December Photo of the Month contest, just email me at cablewaco@yahoo.com. It's free to play. One other thing here, we've narrowed down the finalists for the 3 grand prize packages for our first ever Southern Deer Stands Deer Blind Contest, and the winners will be announced next week as soon as Kelly Jordan and Rusty Greer, our celebrity judging panel. So if you submitted a photo of your deer blind, be tuned in next week because we'll announce the 3 winners right here on the air. Moving right along here this morning, we all know that November means a couple things, cooler temperatures, and this weekend, regular gun season opened up. But it also means that the striper are going nuts on Texoma right now, and I've asked Captain John Brett to join us this morning and give us a report on our nation's finest striper fishery. John, welcome back to the show.
Glad to be back.
Oh, John, I always look forward to our visits because Texoma is such an amazing fishery, one of only a handful of fresh bodies of water where striper reproduce naturally. So have the cooler temps caused the bite to heat up?
Oh, last week it started to really get into the fall bite. The water temperatures dropped from 72 down to 67, and they're getting active and hungry. They're waiting for the store it up for the winter.
Mm-hmm. And where are you catching most of your nice fish right now as far as depth and water temperature go?
They're running between 24 and 28 feet and 37 to 41 feet of water.
Mm-hmm.
And they're pretty thick schools. So, and early in the morning, it's a lot of topwater fishing for bigger fish. I think last Thursday we had a 16-pounder, two 15-pounders, and a 13-pounder, all on topwater.
Wow. What are you landing those big ones on?
Large poppers. We're hitting right on shore about 2 feet of water. They're up there feeding on shad, and I don't know. I think the shad were having another spawn because there's a lot of popping on the shore.
And how are the colder water temperatures affecting the striper's feeding behavior right now?
They get really active between 62 degrees and 67 degrees, and they really become active. And then when you get into 50s, they start slowing down again. So we should have a good 2 months of 60-degree water where they're just active feeding, waiting for the winter, and fatten up to get through it.
Okay, so in the morning, you're throwing poppers in 2 or 3 feet of water close to the shore.
Mm-hmm.
And so after that bite turns off early in the morning and you start focusing on the deeper fish, are you using shad at that point?
Yeah, using live shad, which is pretty plentiful now. They had a big winter kill, but the Oklahoma and Texas put in 40,000 shad. And you get, if they spawn, I think they spawn twice this year, you get a million shad per shad.
Oh, wow.
So the population's really up there, shad's very easy to get right now. And, you know, as soon as the sun comes up, the fish pull off the shore. They don't have eyelids, so they can't. So the sun really bothers them, so they're off the shore. But a cloudy day like today is, they'd be probably on the shore all day long. No, fishing's just really great right now. So it's going to peak in, three, 4 weeks, and it's just getting better and better day by day.
Sounds like a winter, man, and I'm really looking forward to our trip later this month.
Okay.
Y'all be sure to check out Captain John Brett's website at texomastriperfishing.com. He's been at it for over 40 years, and there really isn't anyone better in the business.
Okay, thanks a lot, Cable.
We'll talk to you soon.
Okay, be good. Bye.
We've got to take a quick break, but you upland hunters don't go anywhere, because when we come back, we're talking quail with Texas Parks and Wildlife upland game bird program leader Robert Perez, only on the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
But I've been here waiting for you. I held on to your love forever. Tell me you wanted me to, for I believe it's true.
Hey Texas bow hunters, did you know there's a ranch designed specifically for you? Located just outside of Dehannes in South Texas, Boaz Mann's Quattro B Ranch allows you to test your skills with do-it-yourself bow hunts for trophy whitetail, black buck, audad, fallow, axis deer, hogs, and others. And after a day in the field, relax in the state-of-the-art lodge equipped with a kitchen, shower, fireplaces, satellite, flat-screen TVs, pool table, barbecue pits, and more. Call 210-827-0681 or visit BoazManBowHunting.com to book your hunt today. That's BoazManBowHunting.com.
Bigfoot Turfgrass Farms is Texas tried and true, producing the Lone Star State's finest sodgrass for commercial, residential, and wholesale customers for 46 years. They'll even deliver anywhere in Texas. Bigfoot Turfgrass Farms also specializes in hydro seeding, irrigation, and landscape. Call 866-541-8873 or visit BigfootTurfgrassFarms.com, and you'll notice they also offer awesome South Texas dove hunting over their Frio County Turfgrass Farm. It's a dove magnet, baby, so go to BigfootTurfgrassFarms.com today.
Need to buy a trailer? Big Tex Trailers has you covered. From our four-wheeler trailers to heavy-duty equipment trailers, we have a trailer for every occasion and to fit every need. Stop by one of our three South Texas locations. Call Affordable Trailers on Northwest Loop 410 in North San Antonio at 210-699-6000, or Affordable Trailers on Highway 87 East in South San Antonio at 210-648-2700. Then there's our new Big Tex Trailer location on I-35 in Buda. Call 512-295-4292 or visit us at www.bigtextrailerworld.com. Big Tex Trailers, tough as a Texas Longhorn.
Whitetail hunting is as Texan as cowboy boots, high school football, and country music. And my friends at the scenic Rancho Bayas Rocas offer some of the finest whitetail hunting found anywhere in the Lone Star State. Situated 35 miles northeast of Del Rio on the Edwards Plateau, the Carta Valley landscape is breathtaking, and you'll feel right at home in God's country while you stay at the rustic yet state-of-the-art lodge. Rancho Bayas Rocas offers hunts to fit every budget. So call 713-468-5001 or visit RanchoBayasRocas.net.
Patty, this is Roger Craig, and you're listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
and hunting trips in the freezing snow and up before the sun. Yeah, but now they're a part of me, 'cause I got the gun.
All right, a little Roger Kreger bringing us back from break. Hope all of y'all are having a wonderful morning. This truly is the best time of the year to be an outdoorsman. Deer, ducks, turkey, quail, take your pick. It's open season. Well, this segment proudly brought to you by Rick's Outpost, the place for the outdoorsman, located off 380 in Aubrey. Rick's has everything for all of your outdoor needs. Check them out at ricksoutpost.com. Well, all you upland hunters know that quail season is underway. It opened up last weekend, and I figured we should probably talk to the man who has his finger squarely on the pulse of our state's quail population. So it's my pleasure to welcome Texas Parks and Wildlife Upland Game Bird Program Leader Robert Perez to the show.
No problem. Glad to be here.
Well, I'm certainly glad to have you. Robert, why don't you start by telling us a little bit about your background with Texas Parks and Wildlife leading up to your current position as Upland Game Bird Program Leader and also what species you oversee.
Been with the Youth Myths Agency for 17 years. It's straight out of college, my only job.
Very cool.
We reorganized slightly to where now I'm overseeing the Upland Game Birds, all eight species, or four species of quail, lesser prairie chicken, pheasant, and turkey, and chachalaca.
So you obviously have a lot of history within the department, but I want to talk specifically about quail this morning. We all know that last spring and summer's favorable weather means better quail habitat than we've seen in quite a few years. So do you expect an overall great season, or is population recovery something that's going to take place gradually?
I think I'd like to call my attitude towards the season as being cautiously optimistic. There's no doubt that it's a great improvement over last year. But you're correct. You generally take about two good years of weather in a row to really get things coming back strong.
Well, that is encouraging news to say the least. Now, Robert, tell me about Texas Parks and Wildlife's quail surveys that the department has been conducting every year since 1978.
Right. It is a good scientifically sound survey. Like you said, it started in 1978, and it's basically what they call a roadside count. And that's an index to how many birds are out there on the landscape. It's not an absolute count. Very few surveys get you the exact number of birds. So what it is we know where about average is from 1978 to the present, and we can make predictions each year on whether or not we're above or below average. So although habitat conditions came back great this year due to favorable weather, bird numbers were so low they could only come back so much. So our index actually shows populations being below their long-term median, long-term average.
Okay. And now I understand that the surveys are concentrated in the three areas of the state that traditionally have the highest population densities, and those areas are the South Texas Plains, the Trans-Pecos, and the Rolling Plains. So, Robert, if you could, give us a region-by-region breakdown of those three areas.
Correct. People come from all over the country to come hunt quail in Texas, and they generally go to those three areas you mentioned. And the first, South Texas, it had, like the other areas of the state, a great response to favorable winter weather, moisture in the winter, a great spring. And for South Texas, sometimes they miss spring entirely, but it came this year, along with cooler summer temperatures. And by cooler, I mean less than 100 degrees, very few days that were extremely hot. Mm-hmm. And what that does, it allows quail hens a very good opportunity, a long window of opportunity to have a nest. And that's what we saw, was a very long window opportunity for nesting. The limiting factor, what limited the number of birds that could be produced in one summer, was the available number of birds or the broodstock that were out there laying the eggs.
The survivors.
The survivors from the previous year. And so part of our predictions on where to hunt or how things will be are based on how things were last year. So our advice for hunters in South Texas would be, if you had birds or saw birds at the end of the year in January and February, where most people typically hunt during later in the season where conditions are a lot better. If there were still birds hanging on, you had a few, then that means they came back faster in those areas. If you were hunting in areas where there were no birds really to speak of, or there were some habitat changes where, you know, there wasn't really anything to find, those places are going to have to get repopulated by surrounding areas of birds that come back in, and that generally takes longer. So we've actually gotten some good reports from certain ranches saying that they had huntable numbers and they were going to hunt. But we've also got reports from other areas where they say, you know, the numbers were lower than expected, probably due to low broodstock from the previous year.
Okay, so that covers South Texas. What about the Trans-Pecos?
The Trans-Pecos, people that aren't afraid of running up and down the sides of mountains and wearing tennis shoes and in shape, can chase after scale quail or blue quail. And that's a species that that's most common in the western part of the state in the Trans-Pecos.
Right.
And we've got a couple of places, I guess, where people go, Black Cat Wildlife Management Area and the Elephant Mountain Wildlife Management Area, where we do have public hunting opportunities. But it's a big landscape out there, and they had favorable conditions as well, but not everywhere. And we've got plenty of reports that there are plenty of spots that are good, have good opportunities for scale quail hunting this year, but it is a different kind of hunt. Typically, they run instead of flush, and can flush three times, and that's about 300 yards. And so it does take some energy to pursue scale quail, and the terrain can make it difficult on both hunter and dog. But I've done it and did it last year at our state park, Big Bend Ranch State Park, which is also open for public hunting, and I had a fantastic time.
That's the kind of upland hunting that I love. It's tough, but it's a lot of fun, and it's very rewarding when you do have success.
Very rewarding, yes, indeed.
And Robert, lastly, how are the Rolling Plains looking?
Rolling Plains is the other major area of the state that people come to pursue bobwhite quail. And the Rolling Plains also had good weather. It did have warmer weather than South Texas, but it by no means was in a drought. It made a strong comeback, the habitat, that is. Right now, to look at it, it's got a lush landscape, plenty of nesting cover. There's a huge amount of insects, grasshoppers, which are a good food item for quail. Lots of food items on the landscape for them to eat seeds. And we've got similar reports to South Texas, where plenty of ranches have reported that they've got huntable numbers and they will be open for hunting. There are outfitters that are providing hunts this year, but there are parts within some of the same counties or areas in which people have decided not to hunt. And generally, those are the places that were really hard hit by the 2 years of drought, and the habitat just didn't come back. The birds weren't able to capitalize on that because the broodstock, again, was too low.
Okay, now that we know how things are looking across the state, let's talk about another limiting factor for quail, and that is their nest success ratio, which is pretty low for a bird. Kind of get into that here.
I think there's a lot of mythology involved with quail and quail management. People have a lot of mystery surrounding how many birds in a covey, how far to shoot it down, what do small coveys versus large coveys mean, how many hatches you had across the summer. And one of the common misconceptions is there's multiple hatches, or the first hatch, or a second hatch, or a third hatch. And really, it can be perceived as different size classes out there on the landscape. On a ranch, you see small birds, middle-sized chicks, and older chicks. And people kind of think, well, there have been multiple hatches. When in reality, what a hen does is she goes to nest as soon as conditions are good. And if her eggs are eaten by a raccoon or a snake or a skunk or a possum, she's got to start from day one. She starts all over again. So she lays an egg a day for 13 days or 12 days, however many eggs she has, about 11 to 13, and then she sits on them for another 20, 22 days. And at some point in that process, if the eggs are depredated and the nest is destroyed, then she can make another attempt, a second attempt. And if it's at the very last day before they hatched, of course, she needs more time. And that's why the window of opportunity is important on how wide that is. And in Texas, in certain years like this year, that window began in May and stretched almost all the way into August. And that's a very long window. So she could try a second, a third, and even a fourth time. And research has not documented with radio telemetry that hens can make up to four attempts. I think the quail reproductive strategy for them to persist in Texas or on the landscape for so many thousands of years, their strategy is to just have as many offspring as possible when conditions are great. And the reason for that is, like you mentioned, everything eats quail. They're pretty low on the food chain. They're good to eat. Everybody, even humans, love them. And they're not that difficult to catch for another wild animal. But as far as the numbers game, you know, getting adult quail, consuming them, that's just part of nature. That's the process. But how to get more quail, as far as management goes and the weather and conditions, the best offense is a good defense. Having a good amount of nesting cover is really critical in bringing quail back faster. So making sure you've got those nice, healthy bunch grasses that are at least, you know, 8-10 inches tall, where they can go out there and have a nest, that makes a big difference. It's all about numbers of eggs hatching on the ground.
Yes, sir. Now, talk a little bit about how Texas Parks and Wildlife works with landowners that want to improve their land for better quail habitat, because a lot of people don't even know that that resource is available.
Absolutely. We've got many biologists. We've got over 300 employees in the Wildlife Division of the state, and every county in the state has a biologist responsible for it. So you can go on our website and find your local biologist, and he can come out to your place and give technical assistance on how to what actions to take, what management actions to take to help wildlife, whether it be quail or deer or turkey, whatever you're interested in. And that's a service that the state provides at no charge. We're also concerned about conserving quail where they are, but also restoring them where they've disappeared. There are other areas of the state around Wichita Falls to Dallas, from Houston down to Victoria, where there perhaps were more quail and maybe even huntable numbers of quail as recently as 10 years ago. We work with landowners and cooperatives, getting them to work together with neighbors, seek funding and partnerships with Audubon Texas, the Nature Conservancy, and other groups to help people get on track and give them the assistance and even financial assistance in some cases to build habitat. And if you build it, they will come. We've got research that shows that they just need a home.
Well, Robert, we're almost out of time, but let's talk public hunting here for a second. You know, Texas is almost 99% privately owned, and I know you said you had some success out at Big Bend last year. What about other public hunting opportunities throughout the state where huntable numbers of birds can actually be found?
For bobwhite, the most popular destination is the Chaparral Wildlife Management Area, and that's near Cotulla, Texas, in Dimmitt and LaSalle counties. It's a large property, and historically, many hunters go there. I've gone there every year for the past several years, and there's a lot of country. They've done a lot of work to improve the habitat for quail, and it's a great experience to go there as well. Unfortunately, this year, the numbers are a little low. That area was really hard hit by drought, and like I said, there's still some opportunity there. And then the other area would be in the other in the rolling plains of Texas, the other popular destination. There's the Matador Wildlife Area, which is near Paducah, Texas, and also the Gene Howe, which is a smaller property near Canadian. And both of those places are offering some good hunts, and I think that they're having some success up there this year.
Very well. So there are some good public hunting opportunities for Texas quail hunters. Robert, we're out of time. It's been great getting to know you this morning. Thanks for coming on the show. Let's do it again before the December 4th pheasant opener.
There you go. That sounds good. I appreciate it.
Well, there he goes. Texas Parks and Wildlife Upland Game Bird Program Leader Robert Perez. We got to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll visit with the bone collector himself. That's right. Michael Waddell joins the program. You're listening to the Lone Star Outdoors Show.
They call us long-haired, tattooed, hippie freaks, and you know they ain't all wrong. You think they never saw a bad outlaw just singing a country song.
Located on 12,500 acres in South Texas's Sutton County, McPherson 4M Ranch is a one-of-a-kind operation. Owner and operator Sandy McPherson takes pride in running a family-owned and operated ranch that caters towards each hunter's needs. Trophy whitetails roam the ranch's beautiful hill country terrain, and axis, fallow, and black buck hunts are also available. Outstanding lodging and accommodations are also part of the experience at McPherson 4M Ranch. Call 210-822-2915. That's 210-822-2915, or visit McPherson4MRanch.com. Today.
Howdy, South Texas. Cable Smith here to tell you about Pruski's Meat Market and Wild Game Processing. USDA inspected and approved, Pruski's offers choice and certified Angus beef steaks, custom cut however you want. Pruski's also has fresh MSG and nitrate-free sausage, custom smoked hams, ham, bacon, and bacon. Visit www.pruskismarket.com or call 210-649-2151. Pruski's Market, from our smokehouse to your house, the quality you remember with the service you deserve.
Lehman H Feeders has been making the highest quality feeder for 45 years, and it takes 45 years to get 45 years of experience. Manufactured in Texas, we offer feeders for deer, quail, fish, pets, and livestock, and even songbirds. Some of our feeders are still operating in the field after 40 years of use. Makers of the trusted Blind Buddy and Blind Buddy Jr., our feeders are the most durable and user-friendly on the market. Visit www.lehmanhfeeders.com, because life's too short to buy a cheap feeder. That's lehmanhfeeders.com.
Texas outdoorsmen are fortunate enough to live in the best hunting state in the Union, as Texas provides some of the finest whitetail and bird hunting found anywhere on God's green earth. And with fall here, hunters are starting to get the fever. Trigger fingers are starting to get that natural curl in it. Feeders and cameras should be set, guns sighted in, honeydews completed with kitchen passes secured, and of course, don't forget about the new gear. And when it comes to gear, there's only one brand to consider, and that's Game Guard. Game Guard has deep Texas roots and works hard to provide the best camouflage products this state has to offer. So ask for Game Guard at your favorite retailer or look them up on the web at GameGuard.net. Game Guard, made for Texas hunters by Texas hunters.
Cable Smith here to tell you about Star S Ranch. Frankly, it's the place to hunt trophy whitetails in Texas. I know because I've been there and seen their huge bruisers firsthand. Featuring top-notch accommodations with 150 to 220 class bucks harvested annually, Star S Ranch is a one-of-a-kind operation. Located in Mason County's beautiful southern Texas hill country, Star S Ranch also offers trophy exotic hunts. Visit www.star-s-ranch.com. That's star-s-ranch.com to book your hunt today.
Hey, this is Kevin Van Dam, and you're listening to the Lone Star Outdoor Show.
I left Oklahoma driving in a Pontiac, just about to lose my mind. I was going to Arizona.
Cable Smith welcoming you back to the show this morning. This segment proudly brought to you by Red Leg Outfitters, Northeast Texas premier duck guide service. Be sure to check out their website at redlegoutfitters.com to book your hunt today. Well, my next guest just might be the biggest name in the outdoor industry. He's a good old Southern boy and whitetail killing machine. You may also know him as the Bone Collector. Michael Waddell, thanks for joining the show this morning.
Yes, sir, man. I appreciate it, Cable.
Well, I'm just thrilled to have been able to track you down in the middle of archery season. Go ahead and tell us what you've been up to, man.
It's been the most laid-back, busy fall I've ever had, to be honest with you, Cable. We've been a little bit everywhere, actually in Kansas right now, trying to chase down a big old buck. Man, it's going pretty well, and anyway, having a good time. But we started off this year in Alaska, bow hunting for moose and brown bear, and then went on from there. We've been to Mexico this year. Did not even get shot by a drug cartel, but I was not on a jet ski, so that worked out. I was actually with a bow and arrow. I just rode through town with my bow drug back all the time. But we've been here and there and everywhere, and the whole team, we've had a pretty good year, man. We knocked some good bucks down and had a really good season so far, and actually even had a chance to do a little muzzleloader hunting as well out in New Mexico for bull elk, so it got a really nice one out there. So it's been a good year so far.
Very cool. Well, Michael, let's talk a little bit about your background. You grew up in the backwoods of Georgia, and hunting and fishing were just a way of life. So was it your old man that taught you how to be an outdoorsman?
Yeah, my daddy, actually, I grew up out in a little place called Booger Bottom, Georgia, and like I said, there wasn't no traffic lights or nothing like that, just kind of old dirt roads and just an area, and my pawpaw was just kind of old-timer, man. He made little moonshine liquor and basically just farmed off the land and just kind of like a modern-day Grizzly Adams for the most part, and so he always trapped and hunted a little bit, but not as much sport hunting, you know, and of course, my dad hunted and fished and just got it natural, I guess, from the Waddell side of the family of just hunting. And I was about 10 or 11, I started hunting with my daddy. And, you know, mainly just small game to deer, and that led into a strong passion to hunt turkeys. And I don't know, you know, around my neck of the woods, if you didn't hunt and fish, you was weird. That was just the way it was. But I've been really lucky to grow up around folks and mentors that love to see me outdoors and really treated me like a little man, even since I was a little bitty kid, and taught me how to handle guns and how to hunt and trap and fish, and it's just been such a cool lifestyle, and especially now to have a chance to express the way I grew up and have a chance to hunt some of these other places across the nation or world and to show the same passion or to, you know, think about what it'd be like to have my pawpaw there. And in some cases, I still do bring my dad with me. So it's just a really cool gig, man. A lot of fun.
Oh, I can only imagine. Now, you actually got your start in the outdoor industry by winning a turkey calling contest.
That's right. Actually, back in the early 80s, you know, turkey hunting was really starting to take off around Georgia. And our deer herd, we didn't have a lot of really big deer. And so I just fell in love with turkey hunting. I found you could, you know, always get on a gobbling turkey. And even though there wasn't a ton of turkeys around, you could, you know, get a chance and shoot a long-beard turkey, and that was a trophy, something to brag about. And so I fell in love with it and just was really intrigued by turkey calls and got pretty good at it and started competing in turkey calling contests and ended up winning a few and won a few at the national level. And that's really what got me an opportunity to really start guiding for Realtree. So it was the turkey calling that really introduced me to people in the industry that led to an opportunity to work in the hunting industry.
Well, you never know what's going to open up a door in your life. For you, it was a turkey call. Let's shift gears here and talk a little deer hunting now. A lot of our listeners want to know why you don't enter any of your big bucks into Pope and Young or Boone and Crockett.
Yeah, you know, it's funny. I've always hunted, and I remember even growing up in Georgia, I always wanted to shoot that buck deer, a deer that netted at 125 inches. I never really thought much about killing a net 170 because I just thought it would never be possible. You know, obviously, now I'm getting a chance to hunt places that yield those kind of deer. But it really, even though when I shoot a deer, I'm thinking about, man, he made the Pope and Young record book, but I've never really done it. I mean, I understand the deer are trophies, but I just never, when I had that chance, I never went that extra step, because for me, it's just very personal. It's just me and that animal. And, you know, I got pictures and I got a lot of deer mounted and racks screwed to barns and everything out like that. And so even though I use the scoring system as the standard to be able to tell you or my friends, that, hey, man, I got a nice, you know, 140-inch deer, and I'm, you know, and he made Pope and Young, I've never entered one. And I don't know. I'm definitely not against the club, not against, you know, people putting their name in the book. For me, mm-hmm. man, I just enjoy, you know, shooting stuff and whacking stuff. And it really doesn't matter to me if my name's in a book. I just enjoy being able to show the picture and sit down around a campfire and tell people how it come down and how it went down, whether it's 120 inches or 190 inches.
See, I get that from you, man, because it looks like you get just as excited torching a monster 10-point as you do any old doe.
I do. I mean, I really just like hunting. And I ain't ashamed to say I like to kill stuff, man. I love to shoot a big old doe. I love to dull a broadhead and just be successful in the woods. And we eat a lot of deer meat. But I'm so, I guess, unpredictable is the word. I mean, one minute I might have a 130-inch deer on a governor's tag, and I will walk by me, and I might just torch him on the first day of the hunt. And then, like, I was in Mexico this year, and I went back and looked at 100%. This deer's 155, right at 116-inch deer. And I let the deer completely walk, had him at 15 yards, and I don't know why. So for me, I try not to put myself in a corner as to what I'm going to take out. I will set myself goals based on, you know, whatever scouting we've done or what the area might hold. But I just leave myself open, because I think each time somebody gets up in the morning or every afternoon, they go out, whether they spend a morning, an afternoon, or all day in the woods, that they have that right to set goals as to what they want to bring out. And sometimes my goals change, and sometimes I might be a hard-headed trophy hunter. Other times I'm like, man, I'm about to go torch something. First good deer comes by, I'm going to torch it. And so it just depends, man. But I enjoy that, because it gives me an opportunity to be happy no matter what my goal is or mentality when I go in the woods.
Once again, we are visiting with the bone collector, Michael Waddell, here on the Lone Star Outdoors show this morning. Michael, you guys get to hunt all over the country, all over the world for that matter, but I do know you've spent a significant amount of time hunting my home state. So go ahead and tell me about your most memorable hunting experience in Texas.
My most memorable, and by the way, I do think, I mean, Texas has got to be, if not one of the best, it is the best state for just success out there. I mean, when you have a chance to hunt some of the ranches and ground, and the deer management was born in Texas, and it's amazing what Texas has meant to the whole deer hunting community. And I've always enjoyed it. And it's funny, I've told people, you know, Texas, obviously, you hunt over corn. And it's funny, back in Georgia, it's illegal to hunt over corn, but it's funny, people, they'll try to say something about Texas, like, oh, they over there hunting in them some deer rows, them deer eating dirt. And I'm like, well, the only difference is that people in Texas can walk out and talk to the game warden while them deer eating corn. Y'all just running from them, because they got corn just as much in Georgia and Alabama as they do anywhere else. It's funny to me, the situational ethics, I call it. But, man, I love hunting Texas, and I've had so many memorable hunts. But one that comes to mind, I was down in Albany, Texas at the Newell Ranch, well, a couple years ago, actually, and deer were rutting really hard. Tough thing about that, the deer wasn't really hitting the corn piles that much. And so I'd had this old doe kind of skittish come through there, and she picked up a few grains of corn. She just run on through there about 30 yards out. And, of course, I've hunted Texas a lot, and I've killed a lot of deer just sitting right there on some Camir deer or on some corn. And this particular morning, the deer just wasn't eating corn. These does are real skittish, and these bucks are running does. Well, this doe come through about 25, 30 yards, which in Texas, 30-yard shot is a pretty long shot. You know, uh-huh. Most time you're looking for that, I call it that top pin, that CC. Get them on that close corn, use that top pin. And this deer comes skirting through at about 30 yards. Well, looked up right behind it, there's this big buck, a nice nine-pointer come cruising through on this hot doe and had his head down. Well, I stopped him and I smoked him, man. Nice deer, run over and fell dead. And so I looked at the camera guy. Well, right before I shot this deer, I'd had some fruit stripe bubble gum. I love that old fruity bubble gum, so I'd put some of that in, and it was literally getting close to 9 o'clock, 9:30, and we were about to leave the blind because it'd been dead all morning. And anyway, and I put that fruit stripe in and shot that buck. Well, I was about to get out of the blind, and this place is I could kill two bucks on this place, a friend of mine's ranch. And well, anyway, I look up, and this deer runs over, no more falls dead. So we're doing our high fives and fist pumping, getting ready to get out of the blind, getting our gear together. And I look up, and off the same hot doe, here comes another about 145, 50-inch 10-pointer, all fair chase conditions, come cruising through. And dang, if I don't grab another there, knock him and shoot him in the same steps that I shot that other. And so in a matter of literally hunting all morning, seeing one doe, which is uncommon in Texas, usually see a lot of deer, I had two big Pope and Young bucks down in a matter of 5 to 10 minutes, and we captured all on tape. And I'll never forget that hunt.
I don't think I'd forget that one either. Now, let's talk a little bit about the show Bone Collector. You know, we've had Nick on the show before, but how did you decide on Nick Munt and Travis T-Bone Turner as your co-host for the show?
I think there's so many great hunters out there. I really do. I mean, I'll never call myself a professional hunter, because I really don't think there's no such thing as somebody that is just the ultimate great hunter. There's a lot of hunters I respect a lot as to, you know, basically they seem to always put the nail in the coffin when they get in a clutch. They always know how to read signs and put themselves in good situations, no matter if they're hunting public ground or private ranch. But with Nick and T-Bone, I wanted something based off the history of road trips. I wanted to make sure I brought in some personalities that was very secure, number one, that had tough enough skin that they could be picked on, that have enough confidence about themselves that they could be very capable of making good shots in the field and being capable of walking in and not being, you know, insecure about being in any situation. But I really wanted somebody that the whole camp could always enjoy. You know, whether we were all together in camp or whether, you know, Nick and you, you know, Cable did a show next week, that when you got done, you'd call me back up and say, "That Nick Munt's a crazy joker, man. We had a blast. We smashed some ducks and killed some does and, you know, didn't kill the big one, or maybe we did." That was my goal, and I thought that if I could have people like Nick and T-Bone, then that would make for a successful show. And that's basically why I picked them, because I'd hunted with those guys a long time. T-Bone had always been one of the best bow wrenches and bow shots out there, a big guy. And he never had the chance to do a lot of hunting, really, from a tree stand, because he was too big to get up in one. But just a jolly guy, always fun, always positive, and just always cutting a joke. And I knew that no matter where you went, you was going to have fun with T-Bone. Nick's the same way, kind of a gypsy at heart. If there's a bachelor party in town, you can promise you Nick Munt's going to be there. Going to be the life of the party, crazy. But
oh yeah,
even though he's that way, Nick's a killing machine. He's very serious about being effective and efficient in the woods, and he's very hardcore when it comes to hunting. But yet, as soon as the hunt's over, he's the first one to camp to be cracking some stupid joke and laughing, and, you know, in some costume doing something stupid. So he's almost like the frat guy that you went to college with, but he's also somebody that's got that same Jim Shockey mentality that they can go out there in a rugged situation and get it done. So that's why I kind of picked Nick and T-Bone for that, because they were fun, they were entertaining, but yet they had skills that I knew they weren't going to be calling me making excuses that their bow wasn't sighted in, or their gun wasn't sighted in, or it was too cold, or it was too hard, or, you know, and they didn't want to hunt public or private or whatever. They would just get out there and hunt and be happy with it. Whether we were gigging frogs or hunting big deer in South Texas, they was going to be game.
Well, as someone who watches the show regularly, I'd say that you definitely made the right choice with those two. Y'all have some great chemistry, and that comes through to the viewer. Well, we do have to take a quick break, but there's a lot more I want to get into, including bow hunting ethics, what it was like for you personally leaving Bill Jordan and Realtree, and of course, I want to know what's on the Bone Collector's bucket list. We'll be right back with more from Michael Waddell. You're listening to the Lone Star Outdoors Show. If I'm going down, listen up, ticket heads. When you harvest that wall-worthy trophy, there's only one choice: Rustic Reminders Taxidermy. My friends Josh and Becky have over 19 years combined experience in taxidermy and reproduction mounts. Whether you take down a 200-class whitetail, an African rhino, or a trophy largemouth, Rustic Reminders does it all, producing top-quality mounts while maintaining focus on quick turnaround time. Located between San Antonio and New Braunfels, call Rustic Reminders at 210-317-7292 or visit www.gr8mounts.com. That's gr8mounts.com.
From gun dog training to obedience and deer tracking programs, Rave Retrievers has it all. Boarding, training, and group and private lessons, morning or evening, will accommodate you and your dog. Owner Deborah Lee has 30 years experience in gun dog and obedience training, and has recently added Amanda Farrell to the training staff to offer even more intensive training capabilities. With numerous ponds, creeks, boats, and duck blinds, we offer the most realistic training available. Go to www.raveretrievers.com for all your dog training and boarding needs. That's www.raveretrievers.com.
A place to shoot is South Texas's premier shooting facility. We have a complete rifle range featuring 5 different distances out to 300 yards. A pistol range with gravity-fed targets, skeet, trap, crazy quail, and country doubles. We offer everything for the shooting sportsman. New and used firearms, reloading supplies, scopes, and ammo. If we don't have it, we can usually get it within 2 days. Also offering CHL classes. Located just outside Loop 410 on Morrison Boulevard in South San Antonio, call 210-628-1888. A place to shoot, open 7 days a week. Call 210-628-1888.
Lock Hill Feed Store is South Texas' premier feed store. We carry a variety of feeds, including extra clean deer corn that won't clog your feeders, as well as large and small deer pellets. Also featuring Country Acre Deer Block, Record Rag, Golden Deer Nuggets, and the best-selling berry-flavored ACCO Deer Block. Conveniently located in San Antonio. Pick up a 35-pound bag of Signs Diet Premium Dog Food for only $29.99. Call Lock Hill Feed Store at 210-691-2351. That's 210-691-2351. Or call toll-free at 877-738-5296.
Southern Deer Stands manufactures the only high-quality, lightweight, aluminum-insulated hunting blinds on the market, providing years of use without any maintenance. That's right, no more rotting, rusting, or repairing. Just hunting. Southern Deer Stands product lineup includes tower blinds with staircases, trailer blinds, and ground blinds on skids. We also have deer blind windows, doors, tower stands, and more. Whether you need one or 20 blinds, we'll deliver and set up right on your ranch or lease. Call Rob at 214-551-1530 or visit us at www.southerndeerstands.com.
You just ground checked that trophy 12 point, only to realize you can't get him back to camp because your ATV has a flat. Well, multi-sealed tire sealant protects against punctures in the tread and sidewall of your tires. It seals bead and valve stem leaks, prevents rust and corrosion, lasts for the life of the tire, and so much more. See for yourself at multi-seal.com or call 281-591-0111. So whether it's your pickup, tractor, truck, or ATV, protect yourself with a Texas name you can trust. Multi-seal tire sealants. That's multi-seal.com.
I can still hear the soft southern winds in the live oak trees. And those Williams boys, they still mean a lot to me. Hank in Tennessee, I guess we're all gonna be what we're gonna be.
Great Don Williams, good old boys like me, bringing us back from break here on the Lone Star Outdoor Show. I'm Cable Smith, and I've still got one of the outdoor industry's good old boys on the line, and we'll jump right back into our talk with the Bone Collector. But first, this segment, proudly brought to you by Diamond Sports Marine, with convenient locations in Rockwall and Lake Fork. They are your number one Ranger boat dealer. Check them out at diamondsportsmarine.com. Well, without further delay, let's get back into our interview with Michael Waddell, host of The Bone Collector and Road Trips, which air on the Outdoor Channel. Michael, I want to talk a little bow hunting ethics here this morning. Have you ever taken a shot that was successful, but looking back on, you thought you probably shouldn't have taken that shot when you saw it on film? Or maybe you made a great shot and thought, how in the heck did I do that?
Yeah, actually, it's funny. I usually put out to 60 yards on my bow. And the reason is because I stand behind the old saying, T-Bone does too, that shoot maybe, no shoot, no maybe. And I can say that, and some people might, you know, slander or get mad at me about saying that, but the way I look at, you know, putting pins on the bow, if you're going to have them on there and you're going to practice with them, be efficient with them, then, heck, you can't eat styrofoam, you can't eat a Morel target. Let's get this thing ready, and if you're going to put a pin on there, be ready to use it in the field. And be, otherwise, you don't need it. Just tear it off. I saw my daddy one time. He was a contractor, and this guy had a claw hammer, a wooden handle, and he kept choking up on that hammer and tapping on a nail. And Daddy said, man, use all that hammer. Grab the handle of it. Get on the end of it. You can get more leverage. And the guy kept tapping, so Daddy grabbed his hammer and just cut the end of the handle off. He said, well, if you ain't going to need that other end of the handle, might as well get rid of it. And that's the way I feel about pins on the bow. So I put out about 60, sometimes a little further, depending on if I'm shooting real good. There's some shots I look back that's like, well, man, I don't know. That was a little windy. I felt good, and I shot and made the shot. And then there were some times that I look back like, why didn't I shoot? So, again, for me, it's all about the confidence. You know, I would typically say I wouldn't hesitate to shoot a deer if I got a range on him and he's 50 yards, I'd shoot him. But I've also let a lot of deer walk that it just didn't feel right. And there's been several, you know, deer that we have shot over 50 yards on the show, and typically we'll always get a couple negative responses. But I think the equipment these days is very efficient. And I think if you can feel confident on the range and you can – revert that over into to the field, that makes you a very efficient, cold-blooded killer that you're going to fill your tags. And might as well use your equipment. No need in having a big John Deere tractor if you don't know how to have the right plow up. And I'm pretty funny about being prepared and want to make sure that I can utilize my equipment to the fullest. And the only way you can do that is get to know it and to feel confident in using it. And right now, there's a million different ways that you can feel confident. And if I got time, I'd add to that story.
By all means.
Somebody who helped me more about shooting long range and killing animals was Chuck Adams. He told me a story about basically grouping arrows. I asked him just the same question, how far will you shoot at an animal? And he said, look, depends on what I'm hunting. If I'm hunting elk, maybe I've got a 15, 20-inch kill radius. He said, and if I can take 7 arrows and shoot a 20-inch group, whatever pin that I last use, and I can't shoot that group, is the furthest I'm going to shoot. He said, and I stage it down based on what I'm hunting. If it's a whitetail, maybe I only have a 12-inch of pie plate that I'm going to be grouping at.
Right.
And wherever I can't group in that kill radius of that desired animal that I'm going to be hunting, then that's going to be my last pin and as efficient as I can be, which I think makes perfectly good sense. And if you want to apply that even more, shoot it in windy conditions. Shoot it out of a tree stand. Shoot mm-hmm. it in your cold weather clothes and your warm weather clothes. And I think some of us realize that, man, 40 yards is as far as I need to shoot. Some archers, you might realize that 60 yards is as far as you can shoot. But I always take that same thing that Chuck told me, and then a lot of times what I do is always take that pretense of being prepared, and then every animal I hold, Cable, I always, when I get the range, I'll always take that pin and put it on the bottom of his heart or the top of the heart at most, and always aim low, and I have better luck. Deer seem to always duck, even elk at times. And if I miss, I miss low. And most of the time, I either hit them in the heart if I execute my shot, or they usually going to get three or four inches a lot of times, you know, and it's right through the heart. And you can even see that apply if you watch the TV shows in slow motion. And I've had real good luck of being very efficient and, I think, being very ethical, you know, when I'm trying to perform those shots.
I mean, that makes plenty of sense to me. I guess what it boils down to is confidence. Michael, let's talk a little bit about deer camp. You know, that's a place for good times. And playing pranks and giving each other a hard time are just part of the deal. So what's the best prank that you've ever played on somebody?
The best one, the prank I ever pulled on somebody was actually Jeff Foxworthy. Me and Bill Jordan basically had took his tag off his deer and hid his hunting license and basically had the game warden come check, and we'd went as far as put another person's tag on his deer and had it set up with a game warden to come in camp and check this 160-inch deer, and basically had Jeff handcuffed about to take him to jail, and Jeff was about to go crazy, and we got him good. And to this day, Jeff has not got me and Bill back, which I cannot believe it. I mean, the country's top-selling comedian. And, you know, he ain't got us back, but we had him literally almost in tears. And it's funny, the funniest thing about it, Jeff was leaving that night to go do a show up in Michigan. And Jeff later said, after we let him off and took the handcuffs off, he said, "Man, I through all that, I wasn't worried about what the press was going to say. I wasn't worried about anything. All I kept thinking about is, man, they're about to take my deer." He said that was all I was worried about. But we got him pretty good. But, man, the jokes we played in camp are crazy. And you can tell a lot of them on the show. We pick on each other hard. I mean, if you want to know if you liked around our camp, if you're not getting picked on, probably nobody likes you. We ride each other pretty hard. And I've even said it before on the show, if you know, don't trip up, because we'll go ahead and push you to the ground. A lot of times we'll just go ahead and trip you up too. So we always having fun and looking for somebody to screw up so we can have fun with them. And, mm-hmm. and that goes for me. Believe me, them boys ride me hard too, man. They're waiting for me to screw up.
Well, if you're going to dish it out, you got to be able to take it too.
That's exactly right.
Michael, as someone who's been on both sides of the camera lens, have you ever screwed up a hunt for someone else as the videographer, or has your cameraman ever messed up a hunt for you?
I've definitely moved at times, especially turkey hunting stuff, and, you know, maybe I was on the wrong deer. Luckily, I never had not mashed record, you know, and it is, you know, Cable, you know, you run camera when you're doing it, you know, producing shows for Outdoor Channel and even back in the day on TNN. Mm-hmm. I mean, if the cameraman didn't have it, you just didn't shoot. It didn't matter. It wasn't about what the hunter wanted. You didn't shoot until the cameraman says, and pretty much that still applies right now. Unless the cameraman gives me the green light, I'm not going to be, you know, dulling no broadhead or sending no lead toward no animal. Other than maybe a few duck hunts and turkey, you just go ahead and just do what you're going to do and
right.
Hope the cameraman's doing his job. But on a big deer, you got one tag, one chance. And so you're there and you got all the money tied up in the trip and the production. So it's not going to do you any good, nor is it going to be any entertainment if you don't get it on video. I have shot two different animals where the cameraman, we videoed them coming in from a long way, and I shot them. One was with a gun, a mule deer, and one was a really nice 150-inch deer in Montana that I shot at 15 yards, run out there about 60 yards, and folded up. And the cameraman had been videoing but never mashed record, just get in the moment and see the video and through the viewfinder and just not engage record. And mistakes can happen. We're all human. But, man, it'll make you sick at your stomach. But but it does also put everything in perspective. You still can't lose light of it. It is hunting, and it's still fun. And in every situation, we just, you know, hug the cameraman's neck and say, "It doesn't matter, man. I got a nice deer, and life's going to go on." So and still be happy about your trophy. So.
Oh, that's right. And at least you still got your trophy, and every animal that you harvest is really a trophy. Now, Michael, another question from one of our listeners. Why don't you guys do any high fence hunting on the show?
Correct. We don't. When I come to work at Realtree in 1994, or 95 actually, Realtree, funny, it was such a crazy deal. I remember I used to didn't like it that Realtree had hunted in high fence. But at the same time, I would also enjoy watching them. But when I started working there, I remember thinking, man, this is cool. I'm going to go to the sanctuary and see these big deer. And about that time, as I started working there full time, Realtree had made a decision, no more high fence. Basically, no more high fences like sanctuary and places like that. But there's a few big, big ranches down in South Texas we're still going to hunt. One was the Perlitz. Well, that was actually it. I think they hunted the Herradura. So I never had a chance to go to any of those high fences in the time to see what it was like. Since then, I've visited and I've seen, and I've even killed some deer in some high fence that we didn't televise. But I remember looking back, I think the big thing was it wasn't that nobody had anything against high fence. man, I'm 100% farm. I think it's just important to show the truth in it, you know, and to not hide behind the fence and say that I'm some great hunter and that, because I've also been to places, especially in Texas, that the deer are more spookier in the high fence in a 5,000 acre enclosure than they are sometimes in a place where there's not a fence. And
sure.
I've seen places where the exact opposite, where the deer are skittish outside the fence and they're like a bunch of zoo animals, it feels like, in the fence. So I've had a chance to experience it all. My thing is just go by the rule book. And if you were, I'm not against it now, and not saying that we never would, but if you ever see me in a high fence, you better believe I'm going to be standing at the fence telling you, hey, I'm in a high fence. We're going to see what it's like, and let's check it out. So I'm not against it, but I think you do. I think there's so many great places across the nation right now, the Midwest and even places in Texas left, that's not high fence, that there's basically different strokes for different folks, and there's plenty of hunting applications that you can find that you can hunt the way you want to hunt. We just choose to stay out of the high fences for our productions and to show things in fair chase conditions, or as labeled as fair chase conditions, so people can know that they have the same reality, and typically the same blue-collar guy can have that opportunity to find it, whether it be public ground, whether it is a private ranch, or whether it is a place in Iowa, that you can do a little research and you can have an opportunity to hunt something similar or something like that. And also think it gives us credibility to show that, well, we are going to good places. We're going to places that yield good potential, but it is fair chase, and it's video of stuff that could apply to anybody in North America mm-hmm. that saved a little money and went.
Well, I like the fact that the show is all based on fair chase hunts, but there's nothing wrong with high fence. I've hunted behind them, and when I'm lucky enough to get the invite, I will go again. But the most important thing is for hunters to stick together no matter what. You know, they're actually voting on legislation this week in North Dakota that could potentially outlaw high fence hunting. And the stupid thing is that the group behind this legislation claim to be hunters.
And I don't agree in that. I'm 100% for hunting, period, whether it be in a high fence or whether it's in fair chase. And that's the thing that's very frustrating for me. You're right. Most of the biggest ruckus that's caused is by hunters themselves, either thinking they want somebody to hunt like they hunt, you know, whether it's a traditional archery guy does not want a compound bow, or a compound bow that don't want a crossbow, or a compound or mm-hmm. crossbow hunter that don't want muzzleloaders. Man, I want kids hunting. I want these wives or these husbands hunting. I want some of these husbands that's never hunted, and maybe it's their wives hunting. I want them out in the field. If they would rather hunt with a rifle or a gun or a muzzleloader or a bow or arrow, well, I want them just to hunt. And if it's a business guy and he's got enough money to afford to go to Texas or South Texas and go to a high fence place and kill a deer, I'm happy. I will high five them and I'm tickled for them, because some people don't have that much time. Some of us have Saturday and Sunday to hunt and they got to get back to work Monday morning. Some business guys work every day of the week and they might can take 2 days and go to a high fence place and have a chance for successful. Either way, they're going to be spending money in the hunting community and they're going to vote for us when it comes time to some crazy legislator or some crazy politician who don't want us hunting, period. I'm all for the hunter, period, and I will fight for him, period, because we need everybody to stick together, and a hunter is a hunter is a hunter, period.
That is exactly right, because there is truth in the saying, there's strength in numbers.
No doubt, and I think people can choose it's what they want to hunt. That's like, that'd be like me saying, hey, man, we need to shut down gun season in November because I don't want no duck hunter messing up my deer hunt.
Mm-hmm.
That's
yeah.
unfair. Some people don't care nothing about hunting deer. They want to hunt ducks. I just want hunters out there, somebody that's going to, you know, be responsibly handling a firearm. Somebody's going to take a kid out there and show them. I don't care if they're squirrel hunting, throwing rocks, or getting a slingshot. I just want them out there doing it and hunting and enjoying a campfire and enjoying the same things that we grew up enjoying. And I don't care where they do it. They can shoot one in a 2-acre pen. I don't care. Just go out there and hunt, and don't be ashamed of being a hunter.
Well, we're obviously in the same camp there. Another question for you, Michael. Were you ever nervous or scared even when you decided to leave Bill Jordan and Real Tree and head out on your own? And what was the reason behind you leaving?
You know, it's funny. Man, Bill Jordan and David Blanton give me all of my opportunity, and so many people I can't name. But really, Bill and David believed in me early on as a camera guy, as a guide. And one thing led to another. I got a chance to host road trips. And leaving Bill was very hard. But in reality, I never really truly left him, because what happened was, as any major company and anybody listening that works under a big corporate structure, Realtree become a corporate giant. I mean, mm-hmm. it become, you know, America's top-selling camouflage. And so with that, there was a lot of company policies and procedures. And with the success of road trips, you know, I was a full-time employee. And under those policies and procedures, you know, there was basically nothing I could do outside of whatever Bill paid me. And so it was very hard to figure out the best way that I could capitalize on the success that really the fans and the listeners had given me and given me an opportunity. And so with that, basically, Bill had actually been the first one. He said, Michael, you should become an independent contractor. He said, because I can't have you work here full time. You can't be over here endorsing and receiving money from a bad boy when these other people couldn't receive it that work within my company, that work in the licensing department or sales or wherever, or marketing. And so I understood that. And so Bill actually pushed me and proved to me that not only could I be a show host or a producer, that I also could become a businessman. And so he didn't ever push me out in the cold, nor did I really leave him. He just said, this is some opportunities, but if you do this, you're going to have to take a step like I did back in 1986 when I developed Realtree. And it made me kind of develop some company structure. It made me be creatively think of a show like Bone Collector. And at the same time, Bill sat there and gave me an opportunity as an independent contractor to continue hosting road trips and to have an opportunity for endorsement. So Bill was so good to me and gracious and still believes in me. You know, I can screw up tomorrow and Bill and David Blanton still have my back, and that means a lot. And for that, I'll always have their back, and I'll always have, you know, Realtree's best interest at heart, because, you know, they're like blood to me, Cable. But yes, to answer the question simply, I was very insecure because I was used to working for a company, not for myself. And it was very scary to go out there, especially with the economy. And thank God for all the people that have supported me. Thank God for the people that have supported Bone Collector. It has been, I can't thank the people enough, because everybody out there has the option to spend their money how they want. And for them to spend money on products that I've endorsed and to support me and my family has meant so much. And it makes me even that much more want to stand up for hunting and to fight for it, you know. And so if everything was taken away from me right now, I can't argue. I've been a very blessed man for sure.
Yes, sir, indeed. Michael, one more question for you. As someone who's been fortunate enough to travel all over North America and the world for that matter, is there an animal left on your bucket list that you want to hunt before your days are up?
One was, I checked off that list, and it ain't 100% checked off like I wanted. I did kill me a brown bear, but I shot him with my Remington this year. Shot me a really good brown bear, over 9 foot. And I've always wanted to kill a big moose. I've got two of those. And so really the last thing, or last two things on my list that I really want to do, I would love to kill a Cape buffalo with a bow in Africa, and I would love to kill a brown bear with my bow and arrow. And that's really it. I really don't have any more desires. I'm not wanting to really go kill one of them, you know, Japanese war devil, you know, mountain goats over there to where Jim Shockey hunts, or a Cambodian anteater, or nothing like that, or, you know, one of those musk ox. I mean, I'd shoot them. Believe me, if someone walked by my stand and they said I could shoot them, I'd kill a fire out of them. But there's a lot of things I don't care to hunt as much as I would shoot them if I had the opportunity. But for me, elk, deer, turkey, those three things, I'll always go on a good duck hunt every once in a while. That I would rather keep doing the same things rather than check off a bunch of other things.
Well, Michael, I can't tell you how much I appreciate your time this morning. You've been more than generous.
No problem, Cable. I appreciate it, man.
Well, y'all be sure to visit michaelwaddell.com. You can see all the latest Bone Collector gear. Check on Michael's blog to find out where in the world him and the rest of the Bone Collectors are going to be. Also, don't forget that Bone Collector airs at 9:30 every Sunday evening, so y'all set your DVRs.
Correct. That's correct. And we also have Realtree Road Trips comes on at 8 o'clock Texas time.
Right on. Michael, it's been a blast. Tell Nick and Travis hi for me, and good luck torching a monster out there in Kansas.
Hey, buddy, I appreciate it, man. We'll let y'all know when we do. And by the way, Cable, if you really want T-Bone on the show, all you got to do is just bait him up with a Cheetos gift certificate, and he'll call you tomorrow. You can tell him I said that.
You know I will. Take care, Michael.
I'll do it, buddy. Y'all take care, man. Thanks for what y'all do. See you, man.
There he goes. Michael Waddell, the Bone Collector. What a hoot. And a great ambassador for our sport. Well, y'all, we are out of time. Next week, we're going to talk to an owner of one of those high-fenced ranches in North Dakota. The votes are in. Which side won? Will there be high-fenced hunting in North Dakota? We'll find out. Also, Obama's at it again as his administration signed off on the sale of E15 gasoline. What does that mean? I tell you what, it's bad news for boaters and boat owners. Really bad news for the marine industry. And we'll get an expert's take on how that will affect you, the average Texas fisherman as well. Thanks to our guest this morning, Captain John Brett of Texoma Striper Fishing, and of course Robert Perez, Upland Game Bird Program Leader for Texas Parks and Wildlife, and obviously Michael Waddell. Thanks to you, the listener, for being a part of the Lone Star Outdoors Show. Thanks to all of our sponsors for making this show possible. I'm Cable Smith saying y'all have a great week in the outdoors.
I'll be a-sitting in the tree waiting on the rut. Them bucks a-snorting and a-grunting, you rattle them home. horns together, they come running the rug. This is my time to shine. Yeah, the rug. Them bucks are scraping and a rubbing, a chasing them does, trying to get a little love in the rug.
Are you looking for the perfect way to get around your ranch or lease? Bad Boy Buggies of the Hill Country and B3HC Outfitters have a full line of electric four-wheel drive Bad Boy Buggies, and we customize it the way you want it. Gun and bow racks, off-road lighting, even feeders. We can add them all to your Bad Boy. Also, specializing in custom metal arts and gate signs, as well as custom golf carts for street and off-road applications. Conveniently located in San Marcos, call 512-667-6005 or visit www.b3hc.com. That's b3hc.com.